We're holding on page 22 in Psachim, Oishchof Gadim. We started learning yesterday about the question, when was fire first created? So we said, Adam Rishon discovered fire Matzah Shabbos, as we're going to quote later further on a Braisa that talks about that, and therefore that we make a bracha every Matzah Shabbos on fire to commemorate that. But then the Gemara asks, that you have a braisa that mentions Asorah Dvorim Nivru Be'erev Shabbos Ben Hashmoshes, and much of it is the same list as in Pirkei Avos, but a few things are different. And one of them is that Reb Nechemya Oimer Meshum Aviv, Reb Nechemya had said in the name of his father that another thing was created Erev Shabbos Ben Hashmoshes is fire and the mule, both of which we're going to talk about further on in the Gemara. So therefore, so the question would be, at least according to Reb Nechemya, why are we making a bracha on fire on Matzah Shabbos in that case? So we said that the fire of Gehenna was created on Erev Shabbos, or for our kind of earthly fire that we're familiar with, was first produced on Matzah Shabbos by Adam Rishon. So now the Gemara asks, "Urd Gehenna be'Erev Shabbos Ivri?" So you're telling me the fire of Gehenna was created on Erev Shabbos by Hashmoshes? V'hot Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Shiva Dvarim Nivru Kodim Shenivra Olam. There are seven things that were created before the world was created. So before we were talking about things that were created after the world was created, but Erev Shabbos Ben Hashmoshes at the very end of the world's creation. Here we're talking about things that were actually created before the world was even created. Although with that said, Marsha, this Gemara is this list is also in Nedarim, and Marsha explains over there some of the things may actually be after Hashem began creating the world, but before dry land came to be. So before the third day, we're going to mention Gehenna on the second day. So therefore, so that's fine. That's still considered before Bria Olam in the sense that the dry land was revealed on the third. Anyway, the idea is all seven of these things are needed for the world. Elohein, Torah, Utshuva, the Gan Eden, the Gehenem, the Kisei HaKavod, Ubeis HaMikdash, Ushmoy Shal Mashiach. We actually have in one of the slichas that you find in the printed slichas for Tzum Gedalia, which is coming up in a few days. So you have a piyut over there. You have a slicha that begins with the words Oz Terem Nimtchu. So in practice, our minhag is that we don't end up saying it because it's a psicha. It's one of those things that's meant as one of the introductions to slichas. And since the minhag over time has developed that on Tzum Gedalia, we do it like on other fast days and we do slichas in the middle of davening rather than like now before Rosh Hashanah, where we do it as a separate thing, then we don't end up saying that piyut. But it's a piyut written by Rashi. And it starts out by listing poetically all these seven things, and then the rest of the piyut goes and describes them in detail. The point being that since Teshuvah was created even before the world, so we ask that Hashem should give us the opportunity to do Teshuvah. Anyway, so let's go through each one of those and explain where we have a pasuk that shows that it was created before the world. Torah minayin, where do we see the Torah? Dichtiv, Hashem kononi, yireishis darkei. Hashem acquired me, the Torah, this is the Torah personified, speaking at the beginning of his way. And so Marsha over there in the Nedarim explains that it means by the beginning, even before we have these seven things, but Torah comes before all of them because Alpayim Shana, Kodma Torah La'olam, and only then come the other six. Not time-wise, we learn in the Bar Mitzvah Mayim, where time itself is a creation of Hashem. There's no actual 2,000 years before the world is created, but we mean, in other words, that Torah is higher than any of these other six things. Anyway, tshuva minayin, the next one is tshuva, meaning the capability that by any logic, by human logic, it should be impossible for tshuva to be able to undo what a person did. You actually have a medrash where it says that they asked chachma what should happen to a person who did an avera, and the answer is chatoim teradif ra, he's just going to be pursued by his evil. They asked nevuah, the answer is hanefesh achotes hi tamos, the only choice is for the person to die. They asked even the Torah, what's the Torah's perspective on it? And the answer is he has to bring a korban. What about nowadays, for example, when there's no korban? And then they ask the Eibishter himself, and he says he can do tshuva. So the whole concept of tshuva is something completely beyond even the perspective of nevuah or chochmah or Torah, and therefore, so it's one of those things Hashem had to create even before the world. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, "Beterem horim yulad v'gomer," before the mountains were born. And the next Uchtiv Basu, and the next pasuk continues, Toshiv Enashadaka, you bring man down to a crushed state, Batoimu, and you say, Shuvu Bnei Adam, people do tshuva. So we see that before the mountains were born, before Hashem even created the world, there's already the capability of tshuva. Marsho there in Nedarim says in particular, the Toshiv Enashadaka refers to. There's other Gemaras that mention the concept that there were 974 generations of humanity that were suppressed. The Eibishter's original plan was that the Torah will be given after 1,000 generations, Davut Sivala Elefter. In the end, Hashem saw the world's not going to last without the Torah for that long, and therefore he gave it after 26 generations. So those 974 generations were suppressed, and the Gemara talks about them in Chagiga, and you have certain chutzpah and yaks throughout the generation that come from those neshamas. So the idea is, in other words, Toshiv Enashadaka, Hashem, so to speak, crushed them and removed them from ever existing. And even before that, he says, Shuvu Bnei Adam, there was a concept of tshuva. Next, Gan Eden, Dichtiv, Vayita, Hashem Elokim, Gan Be'edem Mikedem. Hashem planted a garden in Eden Mikedem. Now, the simple meaning, Mikedem, means on the east side. But Marsha points out over there, if that were the case, then it would say Bikedem. Mi Kedem, then we understand the word Kedem also means olden times. So of olden times, before there was even the rest of the world, there's already Gan Eden. The point of it being, Ben Yehoyada explains Gan Eden and also Gehenim, the next thing we're going to talk about. When you think about it, on the one hand, we talk about them as places here on earth. You know, Adam and Chava actually lived in Gan Eden, after all. It has to be someplace on earth. On the other hand, you know, it's not like you can look on a map and find where Gan Eden is. So it exists in the world, but it exists on a plane higher than the Gashmiyistika world. That kind of capability then is what the Eibishter had to create before the world came into existence. And the same thing with Gehenim. So Gehenim, Dichtiv ki oruch me esmul tofte. The pasuk says tofte is set up from esmul. Now esmul means yesterday. So the Gemara elsewhere explains that it means, first of all, here it says it means kodim la'olam, before the world, like yesterday, before the world even began to be created. Elsewhere, the Gemara explains the vort is that esmul suggests that it's a day which has a yesterday, but not a 2 days ago. Namely, that would be the Monday, the second day of Maisa Bereshis. So that has a yesterday. There was a Sunday before it, but there's no 2 days before it, because again, the Eibishter created time together with the world. So on that day, Gehenim was created. And we see it's me'esmul, it's beforehand. Tofte, we learned in Erevin, is a name for Gehenim, should call him Spata B'Yitzra Neufel Shom, because anybody who allows himself to be seduced by his Yetzirah is going to wind up. Simple pshat of it is the word Toifes is mentioned in various places in Nevi'im as a place near Yerushalayim where they used to sacrifice children to Molech, so therefore it became, the valley itself is called Gei Ben Hinnom, which is where the name Gehenim itself comes from, so therefore the idea would be that they named Gehenim after that. Anyway, Kisei HaKovod Beis Mikdash Minayin, Hashem's throne, which represents the concept that Hashem Kavyocha lowers himself to have to do with the world, and the Beis Mikdash, which is Hashem's throne on earth, Minayin Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, Kisei Chavod, the throne of glory, so that refers to Hashem's throne, Morei Merishon, which is exalted from the beginning, where again the word Rishon means beforehand, like we had earlier in the Masechta, that Achbayim Rishon, Heshbisu Soim Vatechem, means you have to get rid of Chometz before Pesach even begins. Mekoyim Mikdashenu, the place of our Beis Mikdash. So we see that Hashem's throne and the Beis Mikdash are both Meirishon, they're from before the world existed. And again, the idea is, as far as the Beis Mikdash, Ben Yehoyada explains, you have all the Asor and Nisim, Nasa, Wabesenim, Beis Mikdash. So the fact that could exist in our Gashmiistic world is that capability is something that Hashem had to create before Maisa Bereshis. And the last one, Shmoy Shomashiach, Tichtiv, Lifnei Shemesh Yinoin Shmoy. Before the sun, his name is Yinoin. The Gemara elsewhere explains that the word Yinoin itself is a name of Mashiach. It also means his name will. It also means his name will last forever, and his name will illuminate, and various other explanations like that. The point is, it's Lifnei Shemesh, before even the Eibishter created the sun. Shmoy Shamashiach, in other words, representing a person's name represents his Metzios, so therefore it represents the Metzios of Mashiach and what he's going to accomplish for the world. Anyway, the point is, we see from all of this that Gehenim was created before the world, or at the latest on the second day of Maisa Bereshis. So what do you tell it? And the Gemara is assuming at this point that when we say Gehenim was created means the whole thing, including the fire of it. So what are you telling me before? That the fire of Gehenim was created on Erev Shabbos. The answer is Amri. Chalala kodim shenivra olam. The space of Gehenna, again, like Ben Yehoyada says, the fact that Gehenna can coexist with the Gashmistic world, that is kodim shenivra olam. V'udida, the fire of it, meanwhile, was created v'erev Shabbos. So that was first created on Erev Shabbos. So far we have the space of Gehenna was created on the second day of Maaseh Bereishis. Or right now, actually, the Gemara is assuming that it means that before Maaseh Bereishis even began, before Yom Rishon even. Soon the Gemara is gonna explain differently. And the fire of it on Erev Shabbos, and then our terrestrial fire that we're familiar with was first brought into existence Matzah Shabbos. But the Gemara says, still v'udi da be'erev Shabbos ivri. So you're telling me the fire of Gehenna was first created on Erev Shabbos? V'hatanya, we have another braisa. Amar Rav Yosi, ur shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'sheni v'Shabbos, the fire that Hashem created on the second day of creation, which is the fire of Gehenna, ein lo kviya olamis. It will never go out because that's the fire of Gehenna, and it continues to last to punish the Rishoyim eternally. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "V'yotzu v'ro v'figurei ha'anoshim ha'poshim bi." They'll go out in Mashiach's times, and they'll see the dead bodies of the poshim of the men who rebelled against me. It refers to the soldiers of Melchamas Gog and Magog. It refers to various other Rishoyim of the Goyim throughout history. So usually the Rishoyim only get punished for 12 months in Gehenna, but these ones have longer term. Marashah refers to a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that goes into the details about that. Anyway, the pasuk continues, the worms that are eating their bodies will never die, and the fire that's burning them will never go out. So we see that the fire, and we see that this braiser of Yosi is saying that fire of Gehenna was created on the second day. Why is it on the second day of Maaseh Bereishis, it does not say Kitoiv, which it does by all the other days, because the fire of Gehenna was created on it, and therefore it's not an appropriate thing to say Toiv on. The Amr of Elazar, which Rabbi Elazar adds, after Pishal and Nemo, but Kitoiv, it is true that it doesn't say Kitoiv on Monday, but in the end, it gets included on the sixth day. Now, Rashi on the Pasuk makes a different point that since on the second day, Hashem's work was, so to speak, incomplete. He had made the Rakia, but it wasn't until the third day that you have Yikavu Amayim, and that job of separating the Mayim Oyonim and Mayim Tachtoinim is finished. So therefore, the Eibush Teskis says Kitoiv twice on Tuesday. But here the Gemara is taking a different tack on it, that the missing key toiv on Monday is found on Friday. And behold, it is very good. And in fact, the Medrash says exactly that. The word toiv ma'od, although the Medrash brings a whole bunch of different explanations of what Hashem saw, that's toiv ma'od, and one of them is Gehenna. Which means, now Marashah says, why should that be? Why on Monday is Hashem not going to say ki toiv on it, but then on Friday Hashem is ready to say it's toiv ma'od? The vote is, on Monday, Adam hadn't yet been created. There's no concept of chet. So therefore, how can you say toiv on a Gehenna, which is there to punish the Rishoyim, when there wasn't even any chatoim yet existing for the Rishoyim to be punished? By the time you come to Friday, where Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas, so now you need a Gehenna to punish the Rishoyim. Now the Eibishter can say on it that it's not only toiv, but toiv ma'oid. It's a very necessary thing for the world to be able to function. Anyway, the point is, we see from that even the fire of Gehenna was created on Monday. So what's left at this point to have been created on Friday that you're telling me that that some kind of fire was created on, according to Rav Nechemia, at least on Friday, Erev Shabbos Bein HaShemoshes? Ela, no. So the answer is like this. Chalala kodim shenivra olam. The space of Gehenna is created before the world was existing, before the world came into existence, before even the first day of Maaseh Bereishis. The fire of Gehenna, like we said, is created on Monday. And that's why it doesn't say Kitoiv on that day. As far as our familiar kind of fire, that Hashem thought about creating it on Erev Shabbos, but in the end, Hashem actually only had it created on Mitzoy Shabbos by having Adam discover the concept of fire. Meaning, in other words, the idea is Ein Kol Chodesh Tachas Hashemesh. There can't be anything new after the 6 days of creation. So therefore, the Eibush has to create the potential for fire on Erev Shabbos. That's what it means, Olah B'Machshava. But then Hashem wants that it should be accomplished by Sarusa Delasata, by human agency, and therefore the Eibishter left the actual bringing of it into existence for the first time for Adam to discover it, Matzoi Shabbos. Okay, D'tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yosi, Shnei Dvarim Olam Machshava Liboris Be'erev Shabbos. There are two things that Hashem thought about creating on Erev Shabbos, and that means already Hashem's thoughts give it a certain mitzius. V'loy nivru ad Matzoi Shabbos. They weren't actually created in reality until Matzoi Shabbos, because Hashem wanted to leave it to Adam to find them. Of Matzoi Shabbos, nosin HaKadosh Baruch Hu bina odeya ba'Adam HaRishon me'ein dugma shomayla. On Matzoi Shabbos, Hashem gave Adam HaRishon an understanding. Bina would be an understanding. Deya would be a knowledge similar to dugma shomayla, a little bit akin to the bina odeya that you find lamayla. And therefore, he was able to discover things. The lokach or the heavy shteyavonim, he took two stones, the tochnan zubazu, and tochnan means he ground them one another. On the other hand, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, if you grind stones together, you're not getting a spark out of them. You need to bang them together. And Rashi, in fact, uses the expression toch vehika. He banged them one into another. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden suggests that maybe the word of the Gemara is not supposed to be the tochanon, but rather the tochon, where therefore the shodesh is toch, which means to bang them together. Anyway, so he banged or ground them together, the yotzmehen ur, and fire came out of them, and that's how fire was discovered. Similarly, the hevi shtei behemis, then Hashem also gave Adam the intelligence to take two kinds of animals, a horse and a donkey, the hirkiv zu al zu, and mate one with the other, the yotzmehen pered, and a mule came out of them. We had before, Rav Nechemiah had said, in the name of his father, Afa Urva Pered, that also Erev Shabbos Menash Moshes was created fire and the mule. So now we're saying, Rabbi Yossi is saying, to be exact, they weren't actually created in our physical world on Erev Shabbos. On Erev Shabbos, they were only in Hashem's Machshava. Afterwards, on Matzoi Shabbos, Hashem had Adam figure out how to actually create these things. What's the symbol? What's the Maile and a Pered? So Ben Yehoyada talks about the idea that Hashem is thereby giving Adam HaRishon a hint. Your job in the world, especially after the Chet Eitz Hadas, is to combine together things. Ashabara and the Kim Lassis. I gave you a world where it's your job now how to figure out to combine things and improve things in the world. So you have a choice. You can do it in a way that will produce fire, which is a very good and useful thing, or you can do it in a way which is going to produce a mule, which is sterile and it's a dead end. So in other words, it's your choice. So how are you going to use the world that I gave you?
Negative.
That's the point. In other words, a mule is a negative. It's a dead end. It's not fertile. You can't get any future children from it. So that represents, in other words, a person has the capability of taking the Eibishter's world and using its resources to create dead ends like that. Yeah. And on the other hand, he has the capability of using the resources of the world to create fire and to create light. Yeah. On the other hand, continues the Gemara, Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm a pered bimei anah. No, Reb Shimon Gamliel says the mule came into existence in the time of Anah. So Anah is mentioned in Parashas Vayishlach when it lists all the descendants of Esav over there, and then it lists also the families of Seir that Esav's family settled over there and then conquered them and intermarried with them. V'cholo. So it mentions a character over there named Anah. The pasuk says Ve'eva b'nei Tzivon v'aya v'Anah, and the pasuk says, who Anna? This is the same Anna, Asher Motzeh Sayyemim Bamidbar, who discovered the Yemim in the desert. So Rav Shimon Gamliel is understanding that the word Yemim over here means mules. And there's a different Gemara elsewhere and in Cholin that talks about they're called Ye in particular. We're talking about over here a type of very dangerous mule, a white mule, or to be exact, Gemara says over there, a mule that has white legs, which is where its bite is particularly dangerous, and therefore it's called Yemim She'emosin Motela Salabrius. People are afraid of tangling with such creatures. Anyway, so he discovered them. So what does it mean? He found them in the desert. It means that he discovered the concept of how to create mules. Dershe chamurais amru, those who daushin chamurais. Chamurais can mean very difficult psukim to understand. It can also mean, sometimes the Gemara has an expression that somebody daushin kamin choymer, and you have a few different explanations of what kamin choymer means. Rashi, there's Gemara in Kedushin, it was a couple of weeks ago in Daf Yomi, where Rashi over there explains that a choymer is like a button or a bundle that you keep spices or jewels in. So the same way, like you have chachamim who know how to unpack doshe chamuros or doshe kmin choymer, like they're able to unpack the bundle and find the jewel or the spice or the fragrance in there. Tosfos there gives another explanation. I think from Rabbeinu Hanano that the word choymer is an Arabic root that means what a person does. Tosfos mentions that in Arabic, you ask somebody what are you doing, you say something like machambach. So therefore, kmin choymer means they know how to darshan things where what's happening in the pasuk appropriately fits the events. So here also, it would be, in other words, that they're darshaning, why is it davka ana of all people who made the discovery? So they said, now Omru, so they said, ana posel hoya, this ana was a posel, he was a mamzer. Therefore, he was the one who brought posel creatures into the world. So in what sense is a mule posel? So the two animals that it comes from, a horse and a donkey, are kilayim one with another. In fact, Maharsha says besides that, there's actually even an opinion that says you're b'chlal not allowed to ride on a mule because it's kilayim. If you're not allowed to harness up a horse and a donkey together and ride on them, alachas kama v'kama, you wouldn't be able to ride on a mule, which is a cross breed of those two. That would be another reason to call it posel. And another thing, Maharsha says, again, when we talk about these white-footed donkeys where their bite is particularly dangerous, so they're posel in the sense that they don't belong in human society. You're not even, the Gemara mentioned in Cholin over there, you're not even allowed to keep them in your house because it's a danger to other people. Anyway, so he was posel, so he brought mules, which are posel, into the world. Where do we see that Anna was posel, that he was a mamzer? Shenema, earlier in that parak it says, Eila b'nei Seir ha'chori yoshve aretz. These are the descendants of Seir the Chori. Chori is the name of the nation he came from. Yoshve ha'aretz, the people who lived in the land, where we learned back in Masechta Shabbos, they're called Yoshve ha'aretz because they have the special talent of being able to sniff or taste the soil and then realize from that what will grow there best. Anyway. And it starts listing Loitan v'shoivo v'tzivon v'ana. So on the face of it, then it's saying that Anna is that Tzivon and Anna are brothers. They're both children of Seir. Uchtiv. But then a few psukim later, it says ve'elu b'nei Tzivon, Tzivon v'aya v'ana. Then it says the sons of Tzivon are Aya and Anna. So, and then it continues, Huana. So what is it? Choshev le ba'ache v'choshev le b'vnei. So it's counting Anna in one posuk as a brother of Tzivon, a son of Seir. And then in a few psukim later, it's calling him a son of Tzivon. So what happened over here? Elam lamed shabot Tzivon al imoy v'hoyle b'mena Anna. It teaches us that Tzivon was Mizana with his mother, Seir's wife, and from them came Anna. So therefore, Anna is both Tzivon's brother and his son. So therefore, we see that Anna was a mamzer. Tosfos actually mentions in Tosfos and a lot of other Rishonim discussed this Gemara in Baba Basra that also brings up this point about Anna and his ancestry over there in a different context. The Gemara mentions over there there was an argument between the Tzedukim and the Chachamim at one point about certain dinim of Yerusha. Is there a certain scenario where the Tzedukim claimed that a daughter should be able to yarshin together with grandchildren, and the halacha is not like that. So where the brother passed away and left a daughter of his own, and then meanwhile, you have, let's say, Yaakov passed away, and he had a son and a daughter, and his son Reuven left over a daughter Dina, and meanwhile Dina a daughter Serach, let's say, and meanwhile Yaakov himself has a daughter Dina. So the Tzedukim argued they should split the nachla evenly, and the halacha is not like that. The halacha is that in that case Serach gets it exclusively through her father. So the Tzedukim are arguing about that. So the Gemara mentions over there that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai brought a proof to them from this pasuk that we see bnei bonim harem to bonim. So Tosfos discusses over there in that case, why do we have to bechlal say that Anna was a mamzer? Maybe he's listing him among the children of Seir because bnei bonim harem to bonim. He's a grandson of Seir. He's Tzivon's legitimate son, and he's counted among the children of Seir because he's a grandson. So Tosfos discusses that point over there, and another interesting possibility Tosfos brings up is that Anna may have been a woman, and she's called in the pasuk a son because her brother Aya died, and she yarshined all of her father's property, and therefore, in that sense, she's like a son who yarshined. So there's a considerable discussion about that. Tosfos also discusses over there, and so do other Mephoshim, why do we have to say that Tzivon is the one who did the aver? If we say that he was Mizane, and then if we say that there was Znus over here, and Anna was born from it, why do we have to say it was Tzivon? Maybe Faker, Seir is the one who was Mizane with his daughter-in-law, Sivan's wife, and then Anna came from it. And there's a good deal of discussion about all the ins and outs of that. One interesting thing is Bechlal, you know, you learn that Perek, Perek Lamed Vav in Bereshis, with all of the descendants of Edom and everything, and you wonder, what's the point of that? Why does the Torah need to spend 43 psukim on talking about Edom and his descendants and all? When there's a lot of different explanations about Horos that we learn from that Perek, and one of them is you see how many Mamzerim there were in Esav's family. Anna's not the only one. You have a few others that you see by analyzing the psukim over there. So the whole family is one big bowl of Mamzerim. Anyway. The point, so then the Gemara continues. So Elo again, Malamit Shabbat Sivan Alim, Mana Anna. So we see that Anna was a mamzer between Sivan and his mother. So the question is, the Gemara asked, Viduma Tre Anna Havu. How do you know? Maybe so you have an Anna who is who's listed as the son of Seir. You have another one who's listed as the brother of Sivan. Maybe it's two different ones. What makes you say it's Davka the same one and to say that he was apostle and he Davka brought Psulim into the world? So the answer is Omar Rava, Amina Milsa Dele Omar Shabur Malka. I'm going to tell something over here, an explanation of this, that even Shabur Malka never said. Umanu, and who do I mean by Shabur Malka? Shmuel. Now, there was an actual Shabur Malka. He was the king of Persia in the times, which also included Bavel, in the times of Shmuel. We do find that he was very friendly with the Chachamim, but the Gemara nicknames Shmuel Shabur Malka in the same way, it actually says, as the same way as a king gives a ruling, and that's it. There's no appeal or anything from it. His word is law, the same way Shmuel is an expert in Dine Mominus. The Halacha is almost always like Shmuel in Dine Mominus, so therefore he's compared in his realm of Torah, he's Lahabdil like Shabur in his Gashmiastika realm of Persia. So Rabbi says, I'm going to give the following explanation. And the Gemara says, Ikadamri. Another version is, Amar Papa, Amina Milsa Dole, Amar Shabu Malka, Umanu Rabba, or Rava, Oimrana. The second version is that it's her Papa saying that I'm going to say a vote to explain this, that even the Shabu Malka of my generation, which is Rabba or Rava, there was a second Shabu Malka, there was a second King Shabu of Persia, and he lived in the times of Rabba and Rava. So again, therefore, the Gemara nicknames the Chachamim of his times after him. So anyway, Rava or Rapapa is saying, I'll give an answer. The answer is Amakra Hu Anna. The pasuk says he is Anna, meaning Hu Anna de Meikra. You're meant to understand this is the same Anna as mentioned originally. It's not a different one. Marsha, by the way, brings up a point over here that the Chizkuni on the pasuk over here, who Hashem Motzeh Hayeim Bamidbar, he asks the question. You find earlier in Parshas Toldos when you have over there Vayigdala Ish that Yitzchak is becoming very great and wealthy, and the Plishtim are jealous of him. And Rashi brings over there from the Medrash that people were saying Zevel Pirdos of Shol Yitzchak, would rather have the waste, we'd rather have the droppings from Yitzchak's mules rather than the gold and silver of Avimelech. So you see that already in Yitzchak's times there were mules. So the Chizkuni says maybe the vote is up until then there was the occasional naturally produced mule, maybe sometimes a horse and a donkey would mate, but yet Anna is the first one to start doing it scientifically and to figure out what the difference is between whether the father is a horse and the mother a mule or the other way around. On the other hand, Marsha says you don't need that. Look, this whole thing about Anna, when did he live? We don't know. The pasuk doesn't say when that whole family of Seir lived. They might well have lived in the times of Avraham and Yitzchak. So by the time Yitzchak comes around, mules have already been invented or discovered, whatever you want to call it, have already been scientifically crossbred by Anna, and therefore Yitzchak had some. And later on, the Pesukim are describing that along came Esav eventually, and he and his family settled in Seir and intermarried with them and fought them and so on and so on. One of those things of Ein Mukdam Ocha Batera. Okay. So that's another opinion of when mules came into existence. We had previously Rabbi Yossi saying that Adam Rishon was the first one to crossbreed a horse and a donkey to get a mule, but Rabbi Shimon Gamliel saying it was actually Anna many generations later. The Gemara continues, Tanan Abonan, Asara Dvarim Nivru Be'erev Shabbos Ben Hashmashos, another Braisa that also lists 10 things that were created Erev Shabbos Ben Hashmashos, Be'evel Hein, and these are as follows. It's going to be, again, somewhat the same list as before, but with differences, and again, somewhat the same list as in Pirkei Avos, but again, with differences. Be'evel Hein, Be'er, the well that the Yidden had water from in the desert, Umon, the Keshes, the rainbow, Sov, we learned yesterday, Rashi had said that that Sov means the Sov can mean the names of the letters of the Aleph Beis, and then Umichtav would be the actual shapes of the letters themselves. That was Rashi's first explanation. Then Rashi's second explanation was Sov is the shapes of the letters, and Michtav, or rather Machtev, would be the instrument with what Hashem carved out the letters on the Luchos. And there's various other related explanations, the idea being especially the Ksav refers to the special writing on the Luchos, which had unique properties in it, as we learned that the middles of the letters didn't fall out, and it could be read backward, could be read on the reverse side of the Luchos forward, and so forth. So all those kinds of capabilities is what are included in Ksav. Anyway, the Luchos, then the Luchos themselves, Tosfos Yom Tov on the Mishnah there in Ovis points out, based on a Medrash, that the Luchos were actually able to be rolled up, even though they were made out of snaparino and sapphire, which is a very hard stone, but there was a nest in them that, on the other hand, they could be rolled up like a Sefer Torah. That was a special property that the Eved Shah created out of Shabbos Ben Hashemeshes. The Kivrei Shal Moshe, the place where Moshe is going to be buried, or Ma'ara Shalman B'Moshe V'Eliyahu, the cave where Moshe stood when Hashem showed him V'Hoya Ba'avir Kvodi, on the same cave where the Yo generation later stood over there, and Hashem tells him Malach HaPoy Eliyahu. The fact that the donkey would open its mouth to speak to Bilam. So it doesn't mean, by the way, Mephoshim explained, doesn't mean that the same donkey is living from then, from Erev Shabbos Ben Hashemoshes, all the way until Bilam's times, 2,500 years. It means the Eved to put it into the genetics, so to speak, of the original donkey, that one day, when it's necessary, it should have the capability of being able to speak. Anyway, psichas piyaretz levloyas rishoyim, and the fact that the earth is going to be able to open its mouth to swallow up the rishoyim, Korach and his group. The yesh omim af maklit shel Aaron shkedel frachah. Some say also Aaron's staff with the almonds and the flowers on it. Again, the same idea that the Eved to put it in the teva of a piece of wood like that, that one day it should have the capability of doing that when necessary. The yesh omim af mazikim. Some say also the mazikim, the shadim. There's a vote on it that says, by the way, Shadim, the Gemara tells us in Gittin and another, and then there's Midrashim and other places that says they have feet shaped like the feet of chickens. So like incomplete compared to human feet. So there's a vote on that says that the Eivishter, so to speak, how do you say this about the Eivishter, like he ran out of time to be able to create the feet properly, and therefore they remain like chicken feet. The idea being, obviously, the Eved doesn't run out of time, but it means he wanted to show us the same way. When it comes time to stop work on Erev Shabbos in preparation for Shabbos, you drop everything, even if it means that you're leaving something important unfinished. Anyway, v'yesh omim af god of shal Adam Arishon. Some say also the special clothing of Adam Arishon. This is the So Rashi brings that it was the special, the kosnes, or the garments that Hashem made for him and Chava after the Chet Tzedas. But the idea is they had pictures of all the different animals and birds and whatnot on them. That was so originally, Maharsha adds, that's how when the animals, how did all the animals come to Adam to be named, is because he had this beged, and that attracted them. So later on, Rashi goes on to say, later on, Nimrod got a hold of it. That's how he became the great Gibor Tzayid, the mighty hunter, because he was able to attract all the animals with that. Later on, Esav killed Nimrod. We know that's one of the five things that Esav did on the day that Avraham Avinu passed away. Harogas HaNefesh was he killed Nimrod, and he took the garments, and that's the big day Chamudos, which afterwards Rivka dresses Yaakov in to go get the brachas. So that was also created. So yes, I mean that was also created out of Shabbos Ben Hashemoshes. The Gemara continues. Now that we talked about things that were created out of Shabbos Ben Hashemoshes, so now a similar thing. Let's talk about a list of things that Hashem created that nobody knows. Turn it up on Shiva Dvarim Mechusin Bnei Adam. There are seven things that Hashem keeps hidden from all of humanity. Yom HaMisa, the day that a person is going to die. For one thing, Maharsha explains, you shuv yomechad lefnei misoska. You're supposed to do tshuva. A person should act during his whole lifetime that he needs to do tshuva because he might die the next day. So if he knows when he's going to die, then he's going to slack off on that. But there's other points also. A person is going to procrastinate on other things that he needs to do. So therefore, usually he doesn't know. The yom ha-nechama, the second thing is the day of nechama. Now, two explanations, Rashi says. One is it means every person has his trouble. Every person has his peckle. So when is he going to be free from that? Nobody knows. And the idea behind it, Ben Yehoyada explains, is if a person knew, that itself would make it easier to bear. And the whole point is, he's supposed to have that pekel for a period of time that only the Eibishter knows, so therefore he can't be told when it's going to be. The second explanation, Rashi says, it doesn't mean the nechama of individual people. It means the nechama of the Jewish people and of the Jewish people of humanity in general, the case, when Mashiach is going to come. And again, the idea is, Marisha says, the same idea. If we know when it's going to be, then we're going to figure we have time yet. So therefore, it has to be that we don't know, so that we're going to constantly be in a mode of tshuva. The third one is the depth of judgment. Now, again, Rashi has two explanations. One is, it means the judgment when you're judging somebody else. People make a mistake about it. People jump to conclusions. Another thing we're going to have in the list is, you don't always know what another person is thinking, but people often, as much as a dayan in particular, for example, is supposed to weigh all the evidence in front of him, but still it's impossible to get down to the bottom of it. There's always a certain amount of bias involved. So that's one meaning of oimek hadin. The other meaning, Rashi says, is it means the oimek hadin osid, the depth of what Hashem's judgment is like. Also, a person doesn't know. For example, you know, the Rambam has the expression, when Hashem weighs a person's schoyas and avonis, and we talk about a person has weighed down on the side of Averis or on the side of mitzvah, so exactly even the Rambam uses the expression that only the Eibishter knows what counts, what the weight of each mitzvah is. It's not just, you can't just count up the mitzvahs and Averis numerically and know what the person is. It's only the Eibishter who's choker levavis knows this kind of thing. So that's oimek hadin. The einanim yadei b'memes staker. The next one is, a person doesn't know what he's going to be able to earn money from. The idea is, among other things, if a person knew what's the guaranteed thing to make money from, then everybody is going to go for that kind of business or that kind of resource or whatever, and it's going to cause inflation on that thing. So therefore, the Eibishter makes that nobody knows, so everybody, that way people do different kinds of businesses and all, and that way there's many different resources available in the world. A person doesn't know what's in somebody else's heart. Same idea. In other words, Marisha says, if a person knew, then he'd be able to always frustrate the other guy's plans. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, now to a certain extent you do know, I mean, kamayim upon him, you can see on a person's face, but you don't really know what makes the other person tick. So that's one of those things that the Eibishter kept hidden from each other. The sixth is Malchus Beis David Masa Tachso L'Mekayma. When is Malchus Beis David going to be restored? Now, we said before in the Chama and Rashi's second explanation of Yom HaNechama, and Marsha prefers that explanation, is it refers to the Nechama of Mashiach. So in that case, what's Malchus Beis David? So Tosfos says, Marsha says that the Nechama can mean Mashiach ben Yosef. And then Malchus Beis David is Mashiach ben David. So both of those things are hidden. And the last one, Malchus Poras Masei Tichle. Poras is something changed by the censors. In the Gemara, you have Umalchus HaRishah, Umalchus Chayeves, or whatever, it refers to the Roman Empire. When is that, and all of its continuators that you have, Adayem Hazeh, you have the Avi Avos HaTumah over there in Rome, you have all of Western civilization and all of the ideas and mentalities and all that come from them. When is that going to be over? Also, nobody knows. All of those things are hidden. You have the Alter Rebbe brings the expression in Igeres Chof Beis of Tanya. He's talking about the idea that you have to be careful not to judge another person. He says, you know, you see in this list over here, Einonim Yidea, Ma'abaliba Shachavere, and you also have right next to it, Malchus Beis David, Masa Tachsa. The same way as nobody can lay claim to say, I know when Mashiach is going to come, the same way nobody can lay claim to, I fully understand the other person, and therefore I have the ability to judge him. So therefore the Alter Rebbe cautions, be very careful about that. The Gemara continues, Tanan Abanan, Shloisha Dvarim Olav Machshov Ali Boris. There were three things that Hashem planned to create, and he did in fact create them. The Imloy Olu, even if they hadn't come in Hashem's thought, Dinhu Shayalu, it would have been only right that they should come up, because the world can't exist, can't function without them. The first one is Alamesh Yasriach, that dead bodies should rot. Because Rashi explains, otherwise people are going to want to keep the body by them, and they're constantly going to be reminded of their tsar that they have the body of their relative there. So therefore, the Eibishter does a chesed and makes it that the body rots, and that way they have no choice but to bury it. There is a very interesting vort also on it from Rabbi Avigdor Miller. I don't know if it's his own chiddush or if he gets it from somewhere, but anyway, he says another vort of it is when you see a dead body, after all, you think it looks to your superficial way of looking at it, this is the whole person. Yes, you know intellectually and with emunah that a person has a neshama, but still, seeing is a very powerful thing. So if you see the body around all the time, you're going to think that this is the entire person, and you're not going to realize what a person really is, that the main thing of a human being is their neshama. Therefore, the Eibishter makes, not only that a human body rots, but it smells worse when it rots more than any other body of any other animal and of any other creature, and that way you go and bury it as fast as possible. The second thing is that a mess should be forgotten, because again, otherwise people will constantly be sad over their dead relatives. And the third one, that grain should eventually rot. Otherwise, people will store it up indefinitely, and then that the prices will go up, and there'll be a shortage of food. Some say also that coins should circulate. Which there's a lot of different explanations. What's the chiddush of that? Marsha says, b'chlal, the very fact that kings mint coins with their picture on them and they have people use them for all kinds of even mundane transactions, maybe the kings should consider it a bizoyan of themselves. No, they don't. The Marshal says another vort that otherwise, how would Aniim have a way of parnasa? They have no fields or vineyards or real estate or whatever. So this way, there exist coins, and that way they can make a living. Also, there's other explanations. Ben Yoyada points out that it's also it makes for a standard of exchange. This way, you have a standard way to know how much is this worth relative to that, and that way the world is able to function like that with a standard like that. So those are all those kinds of things that are included. Is Alamak Beya Shayetse, the fact that coins circulate is a that the Eibishter put into the world. Otherwise, another point is also, why would a person give an actual resource that they could use away for a coin or a dollar bill it itself has no intrinsic value besides what the government says? That's the chiddush of what the Eibishter created. Okay. The Rebbe talked about that we should have B.S. Mashiach B'Poyo Mamish, and even that we should have it, but that we already had it B'Loshon Ovar. You have the famous expression that the Rebbeim, that when Mashiach comes, it'll be publicized in the newspapers. And it was, when the Rebbe said the Sicha at the end of Tavshin Nun Aleph, there were all kinds of things in the headlines about Hinei Mashiach Ba, and it needs to be publicized even more, and that Mashiach is already Ba B'Poyo Mamish, L'mata Me'asar Tfachim, in a revealed way in front of everybody in the world, and certainly the Einiko Yisrael take from Yad Mamish. You should actually have that B'Poyo Mamish, L'mata Me'asar Tfachim. Continuing with Seder HaLaila, if a person said Shema before it was nighttime, then he needs to say all three parashiyas in Kriya Shema Shalamita. If he said it after it says, then technically he doesn't need to say them in Kriya Shema Shalamita, really only the first parasha, but still Mitzvah and Amulchar is to say the three parashiyas and then the rest of the Seder of Kriya Shema as you have it in the Siddurim. He mentions over here that many Siddurim, they have a Mapu before Kriya Shema. It's really best to say it at the end, and that is in fact how the Alter Rebbe has it in his Siddur, Hamapu being the last thing. There's even an explanation that says that you have a mapel, and then the first thing in the morning, at least it used to be the first thing in the morning, was you said a lakai neshama, and for that reason, a lakai neshama doesn't begin with baruch, because the bracha, smucha lachavot, the last thing you said was a mapel, and the next morning, the first thing you're saying is a lakai neshama.